Then I guess.
Definitely.
Yeah.
But you know, there's
really?
Yeah, it's strange. I've never seen this go so fast. Right, I know, that's what.
Let's take a chance.
All right.
Barbara writes novels. I write queer reports by comparison, so if you leave it to me, well, I think it'll be troublesome. Anyway, good morning. It's Tuesday, May 26th. It is 9:33, which is absolutely on the nose, 9:30 by legislative standards. This is the Committee on Housing and Planning. We are in a non-voting mood, and the people who are setting said mood are Legislator Peter Harkin, Legislator Marty Rogowski, and myself. We will shortly be joined by Legislator Myers, who has discovered rush hour traffic, which is unusual from her part of the woods. But the purpose of the meeting is to review, I guess it's sort of an Ed Kochian moment. How are we doing as far as foreclosures are concerned? And that's why Dharma Drummond is here to fill in the blank spots.
Sure.
I should remind people that we have to be out of here by 10:30 because this is the one time during the month when we stack up three meetings in 3 hours. So if we'd be mindful of that as we kick things around.
But I won't ask any questions.
What? No. Marty, I do not wish to end the discussion, but perhaps a little write it down part or something like that. Anyway, no, of course you can ask questions. That's why we're here. That's who we are. Norma, let's talk.
Good morning.
Good morning.
When I last spoke to you all about foreclosures, it was late last year, and we were based on the number of list pendings or the default filings that were happening. We were truly worried that this peak in Westchester had not happened yet. I'm still of that same mindset. Okay, I still believe that based on the numbers, and we've been tracking them on a monthly basis, of the actual filings in the county clerk's office, of both the actual foreclosure judgments and the foreclosure, the list pendings, the default notices, I really do think that we are still on a track where our numbers are going to be much higher than they really should be. They're probably going to be a little bit less than they were last year, but again, recognizing that in New York State there is a 444-day delay from when the original default filing is done until the actual foreclosure judgment can in fact happen. And you're looking at the numbers from late last year for the default filings, I think the peak is still coming. So let me just take you through the chart. I believe Barbara put this chart in your folders last week.
Yes.
On top is the default filings. So the top part shows you that a normal year for Westchester County was 2005, so we had a total of 1,085 list pendings or default filings in that year. Our peak to date was 2009, where we tripled that. We were at 3,127 default filings. So far, for the first third of 2010, we are at 873, which if you times that by the three, we're going to be lower than last year. But again, we're worried that if you go back, take these back a year ago, a little bit more than a year ago, or more like a year and a half ago, look at the numbers and if you look at the filings in late 2008 to kind of give you some sense of where things are. We do think the numbers are going to peak, but maybe not, since this is just the filings. We're not truly sure at this point. For the actual judgments itself, though, this would probably help can project a little bit better. The judgments itself, again, a normal year was 2005, so in 2005 we hit 300. We actually hit a peak in 2008 of 1,033. 2009 we had gone down about 30% to 731. So far, for the first 4 months, or the first third of the year, we are at 195. So now, if you times that by three, we're only going to be at 600. However, if you look at the numbers of the list pendings that, or the default filings, from all of last year, that's where we hit the peak of the default filings. So if you translate that out, really the peak of the foreclosures is going to be later this year and early into next year, assuming all defaults go into foreclosure, which, you know, clearly you can see from the numbers, not all the defaults go into foreclosures. In a little over a year ago, last March, the county was awarded a $7.3 million grant from New York State to help with foreclosures. We finally executed the grant agreements with New York State, and we are actually, in fact, identifying...
About a 14-month lag.
Oh, tremendous lag, yes.
Terrific.
And so I can actually show you, this is our first foreclosure that we are actually acquiring. This is up in the city of Peekskill. It's actually on Nelson Avenue. It is literally right at up the block from City Hall. This house was actually on the market not too long ago for over $600,000. We are actually acquiring this property directly from the bank for $179.
$179,000.
$179,000. Let me just say that.
Good bargain.
So we are working with the city of Peekskill, the building inspector, and our rehab specialist are working together to actually make sure that this house is legally what it's supposed to be. It is one of Peekskill's what they call painted ladies, so it's a Victorian house that they would like to, you know, you're not allowed to put vinyl siding on there. So actually to rehab the house to a standard that's going to make it marketable, although you really don't have to do much to make it marketable in Peekskill, the rehab estimates are about $250,000. So this $7.3 million that we have will enable us to do all the rehab that's required to be able to get this house back on the market. And we're going to probably, we haven't quite figured out what the sale price is going to be, but it's somewhere going to be in the range of about $240,000, $250,000. So to be able to get that property. And it will be deed restricted for the next 20 years. So it will be available to homeowners to households earning up to 120% of the county's median. So it's about $122,000 for the family of four that would be able to purchase that home. And you know, it will be deed restricted so that any future resales would be subject to the same requirements going forward. We have until September 20th of this year to identify foreclosed properties to use the $7.3 million for. We have right now identified four properties in Peekskill. We are working on probably about 12 in Mount Vernon. We've identified probably about 10 in Peekskill, I'm sorry, in Yonkers, but we haven't quite gotten the approval of the city folks to be able to move forward on some of those. And one of the things we said from the start was, you know, we were working in conjunction with the city planning departments to make sure that the city was in fact supportive of the purchases that we would be looking to make. In Mount Vernon, we actually found one street, I believe it's called Union Avenue, or Union Street, where there were four houses in a row, foreclosures and burnouts. And so actually when we went in and actually expressed to the bank our interest in buying all four, where we would actually demolish two and then rebuild them, now a private developer actually has now stepped in and is actually going to be buying at least one, if not two of them, but we'll still be able to get at least one, if not the other one that was left over. So we are anxiously at this point moving forward. Michael Martino is our real estate consultant. He used to be a vice president down at the New York State Housing Finance Agency, so he understands real estate very, very well. He is actually driving around the three communities right now where this money is eligible to be spent, Yonkers, Mount Vernon, and Peekskill, to identify any properties at all that could fit into the criteria. We are focusing on 2 to 4 family houses right now. When we turn around and resell these properties, the money will come back to the county. At that point, the county will then go back and buy more foreclosures. With the second reuse of this money, when we've purchased the existing round of houses, which we expect we're going to buy about 19 of them all told, maybe 20 or 21, depending, because the prices we're getting are a little bit lower than we expected. So when we go out and buy all of these homes through either Community Capital Resources, the Mount Vernon Urban Renewal Agency, the Housing Partnership from New York, and the Yonkers, they have a Housing Development Finance Corporation that we're going to be using. So the county does not get into the chain of title, so it does not require board legislators' action to be able to move forward on these. We will be providing enough funding to these agencies for them to acquire the house, rehab it, but carry it for the entire time until they can actually identify a seller, you know, somebody to sell it to. So that taxes will continue to get paid on the property and the lawn will get mowed and the property, you know, will start paying attention to these neighborhoods. We have a separate contract with our housing counseling agencies, the HUD certified housing counseling agencies, under the auspices of Housing Action Council. They are contracting with two of the other HUD certified counseling agencies, WRO being one and Human Development Services of Westchester being the other, so that we will have in fact a ready pool of qualified home buyers to be able to buy these homes at such time as the rehabilitation is ready to go. So the program is well up and running at this point. We are making energy improvements to the homes. We are going to be upgrading appliances and things of that sort to, you know, at least to an Energy Star minimum, just so that we can, you know, try to minimize the housing costs for these homeowners. We're probably going to be pricing these homes at about 100% of median, but recognizing that we will be able to sell them to households earning up to 120% of median, because the idea again is you want a window. You're not always going to find that household that wants to live in Mount Vernon on this specific street. So we're going to build ourselves a little bit of window so that again in the future for resales there's a little bit of ability to have that the price go up.
I'm sorry,
that's
a few
fine.
Minutes late. Norma, Yonkers is, in other words, you're waiting for the mayor, you know.
The planning department just, we've run a number of properties by them for them to consider, and just because of the hierarchy at the city, it kind of has to go through a couple different layers for them. It's not the city council, it's really the planning department that's giving us guidance. There are a couple properties, a couple nonprofits that came in with a couple of outside of the box kind of developments, like one developer, Community Builders, came in with an idea to buy a 65 unit development. Well, that really wasn't in the scheme of what we were looking to do down there. And ultimately, after about 3 weeks, Yonkers came back to us and said they really didn't want to pursue that. The problem is the banks want a 48-hour turnaround. And so trying to get the municipalities to respond within that kind of time frame is a little difficult, but you know, Peace School is wonderful. They get back to us literally the next day. And Mount Vernon is now has a rehab person going out right away. Yonkers, we still have to just get in the habit of doing this. So after we've purchased, rehabbed, and sold the first round, as the money starts coming in, then the county can actually look at additional areas. We can start looking at Portchester. Well, unfortunately, Marty left the room, so he's not here.
We'll tell him when he comes back.
Sleepy Hollow, Ossining, and Mount Kisco, those are all areas that can qualify in the second round, okay? And as well as Yonkers and Mount Vernon and Peekskill can also continue. But it goes by HUD's scale of what they call their risk of abandonment. So they through their own data, identified these blocks and census tracts within zip codes where they identified the highest risk of abandonment. And if we actually look at the numbers of foreclosures in 2009 and 2010, their numbers really are falling true. This is what Deb actually brought up copies, so I can hand these out now. We did summaries by communities for you of all of 2009. These are the actual foreclosures themselves. So of all of 2009 and then January to April of 2010, just so you can see where in fact the foreclosures are at their highest. In all of 2009, the community hardest hit was in fact Yonkers with 156 foreclosures. And Mount Vernon was second with 127. So far for the first 4 months of 2010, Yonkers again is still highest with 47. Mount Vernon second highest with 36. But you see Yorktown has 11 so far this year. White Plains has 10, New Rochelle has 12, Greenburg has 11. So, you know, Yorktown's, you know, higher than we would have expected, given that if you look at really where the higher numbers were by the end of last year, it was Ossining, Peekskill, New Rochelle, Greenburg, Portland, and White Plains, and actually the city of Rye at 33 in all of last year. So, sorry, but this just gives you some sense of where, you know, again, we're tracking not just the numbers overall, but also by community. I actually do have the listings by street addresses as well, both the list pendings and the foreclosures. Just kind of keeping an eye on, are there specific streets that are being the hardest hit? So
you've just blasted a lot of data at us.
Yeah. Sorry.
Now that's terrific, because this is why we're here. And as I indicated before, we're in enough of a time bind with a successor committee that it's great to have Pete.
Thank you. Thank you,
sorry,
Mr. Chair.
Didn't mean to catch you
in mid-swallow. Question for you. Thank you again for the bi-municipality. This is helpful. We have, through the county, a number of foreclosure prevention programs.
Correct.
How, in addition to the federal and the state programs, but let's focus on the county programs since that's what we're funding, how effective have we been with our programs from saving someone who's at the filing state before the judgment state? Or are we having an impact with our programs and our contracts?
Actually, the better people to respond to that are, in fact, the nonprofits. I'll just give you a quick overview on that. The county has contracts with Westchester Residential Opportunities for Foreclosure Prevention and Human Development Services of Westchester. So we only actually have contracts with two of the HUD-certified counseling agencies to do foreclosure prevention. We also fund Housing Action Council through their Homeownership Counseling Center, which provides this service, but specific to foreclosures, we have contracts with these two agencies. So,
From our perspective, yes. We have right now, since January year to date, we have five households that have permanent modifications, and that's a big deal.
Yeah.
These are permanent modifications. And we have approximately 16 that are in trial modifications. And trial modifications, you hope, will eventually become permanent modification. The problem sometimes that we have with banks with trial modification is they'll approve you for the trial modification, and 2 months later, okay, we're not approving you for a permanent modification. So that's one of the struggles we have with banks. But from our perspective, the ability to intervene and work with families to address this has been very good. I'll tell you a problem that we're having, however.
Okay, thank you.
Although we're doing a lot of community education, the folks that we least expect, to hold off at before coming in, and they wait until the last minute, a year into their foreclosure process to come in, are lawyers. And lawyers that do closing. A week ago, I know this person well. I walked into the office and he was there, and I said, "Hey, how are you?" He said, "I'm fine." And I didn't know what I did there, so I said, "I'm good. I'm good to see you." A couple of minutes later, I said, "Oh, I know Jeffrey. Let me say hello to him." So he came back. We were talking. I said, "So what are you doing here today?" He goes, "Well, we're in foreclosure." And I said, "How far are you into foreclosure?" He goes, "We're going a little bit over a year now." And I said, "So have you been paying your mortgage?" He goes, "No." So I said, "Well, I'm assuming you're putting away the money that you used to make your payments." "No." And I said, "So where's your wife?" He goes, "Well, she's an attorney that does closing, so she was embarrassed. She won't come. So she sent me." These are the professionals that we're getting in our doors now. The folks that normally you'd think are responsible professionals that would know the right thing to do and the right time to do it, they are the ones that have this stigma of shame, this perceived stigma of shame. So now they're not showing up at all until they've gotten that final letter that says, "You have no other options." So this, I think, is in need of a PSA at the county level, at the county executive level, so folks can know that whomever you are, whatever your socioeconomic status is, you need to take some action now and not just wait and assume that it's going to disappear.
Thanks. Just a follow-up. Thank you for the numbers for 2010. Do you have final numbers for 2009?
We do, but I didn't bring them with me. I'll get them to you, though, because Veronica has them.
Yeah, that would be...
You have them sent to Mrs. Dodds.
Yeah,
I will. I can report to you on my numbers, if you like. Now, this is for the first 6 months from the HUD year. So HUD starts October 1st as of March 31st. We've had currently receiving foreclosure budget counseling, 241 cases. Some of them are carried over from the previous year, though, because it takes a while, sometimes depending on who the lender or the servicer is, if they're switching from one lender to another, you have to start the process again and submit all the paperwork. mortgage modified, there are 16, and currently those that are in forbearance agreements or in type of repayment plan, we have 14. And separate numbers would be those that have been able to sell their houses, which is for a short sale. Let me see, we've had 3, because it just takes a long time. But just to take into consideration that when you're submitting a modification packet to any lender, you're talking about an average of 40 pages or more, because they're asking for so many different things. And sometimes it's really hard to write the loan number in every document as you have to, because you never know where it's going to end up.
So
it's a lot.
Let me ask all of you, just sort of throw it out. You're doing great work, and we appreciate it greatly, but it just seems to me, in spite of our best efforts, we're still losing a lot of folks. Is that
no?
Is that safe to say or no?
You're saving a lot. You're saving a lot. I wouldn't say you're losing a lot of folks.
We're doing about between 60, almost 70% of the people that come to us that qualify get trial modifications.
Okay, of the people who come to you.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so I guess that gets back to your point about how do we educate people to come to you before it's too late.
Correct. And there's this subset of folks that are seniors who are going into foreclosure because they can't afford to pay their property taxes. Not only have we been able to help them to address the mortgage foreclosure issue, we would help them to get a reverse mortgage to pay off those tax arrears. So those are the numbers that we're not necessarily capturing, but those are the invisible folks that need this assistance that we're providing as well.
And our office is seeing a little bit different profile of our group of clients. We're getting a lot of people at 3 to 6 months in arrears, so they're earlier on, and we're able to get on top of it quicker before the arrears get too big. And we also have a probably 15 to 20% that are current but know they're going to be in trouble. And even though the government recently started to put incentives out there for banks, it's still really difficult and to work with the bank with a current borrower who's still kind of draining out their savings or borrowing from family. That's still tough because, you know, the bank is overwhelmed with all the people that are really in trouble. It seems as though even though there are programs, they call it imminent default, like they're going to be in default really soon, that we're not seeing results and attention. But I think it's because the banks are just completely overwhelmed.
Right, and for whatever option that the bank provides, it doesn't necessarily mean that the borrower is eligible. You have to apply for that. So you're taking risks. Let's say if somebody is still up to date, but they're going to fall behind. Well, an option is maybe a forbearance. However, it's not guaranteed that after the forbearance period, they'll be able to modify their loan. And when you do a forbearance, your credit score is impacted. There are late fees and everything else. You know, the account is not being... the money is not going to the account, it's going to a suspense account. So there's so many different things that the homeowner has to take into consideration when they decide on what option to take. But it's a lot.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to sort of point out too that when you look at those large numbers of
we're recording this for minutes purposes, so no, you just get a little closer and state your name whenever you first speak, because
Dennis McDermott.
Yeah, it makes it a little bit easier for Barbara to catch it up.
So I just want to share the thought that of that large number of properties that have been served or in foreclosure, many of them wouldn't qualify for help because A, they're not owner occupied, or B, there was some fraud maybe in the package, so that the people really don't have the income they don't have. So it's really the honest, sincere homeowners that are being helped by the counseling agencies. I'll go back to the counseling people, but is that fairly accurate?
I was going to say one of the most significant components of the county funding was the piece for legal assistance, because without that, a lot of the families who just don't have the resources to represent themselves, if indeed their cases were so prime and predatory, if it weren't for Mark Bergman, you know, there's very little we could do to help them. Right?
Mm-hmm. Because a lot of them need to respond to summons and complaints, and you know, housing counselors are not attorneys for the most part, maybe some are. But we do need that legal backup so that we can help that particular client, because that's a timely document and has to be sent back within 30 business days. And in addition to that, then there are settlement conferences. You have to go not only once, but several times. So it's a very long progress and a very long process.
Well, I must say, Steve, a discounted fee too from Mark Bergman, so that's helpful.
So. Norma, you suggested that the decision-making process on where to spend this $7.3 million that you mm-hmm. have from HUD was driven by a great extent, to a great extent, by HUD priorities as to what communities, what
correct
even blocks are
census tracts that HUD tracks. Identified as with the greatest risk of abandonment. Right.
So we are not a free agent in selecting these properties,
correct.
Except for the individual decision, the decision on the individual property, but where to go is controlled by HUD statistics, and the communities in which we're allowed to work are also controlled by HUD decisions.
Correct.
So within that, are you finding that you've got plenty of work to do, or are you feeling that you're missing, you'd really rather be somewhere else? I mean, that's not the right way to put it, but you'd really rather be doing more at the same time with the amount of money, and that you're not really able to move the money through the pipeline, or is that not the issue?
We're not finding that that's the issue right now, because again, we've really only had the contract fully executed with the state probably for about 6 weeks now. And so in that 6 weeks, we've really identified at least 15 good properties for us to go forward on. Even, you know, we've got more that we're in this exploratory stage. The only community that limited where they wanted us to focus was Yonkers. Yonkers, while the entire city is eligible, Yonkers specifically told us they only want, the planning department only wanted to focus on the zip code of 10701. That was where they just truly wanted this focus, the focus of this program to be. So we would have had, you know, the rest of Yonkers is eligible, we could have spent and have greater impact in other parts of Yonkers. But again, for the first priority, for the first wave of spending, you know, maybe it just makes sense to focus more. I mean, we wish that we could get more properties on one street, because the more we can focus on one street and really turn around specific streets or specific neighborhoods, the better off we are. Peekskill is only 4 square miles, so to get 4 properties in Peekskill is fine. It's we're going to accomplish something by getting those sporadic ones.
And again, note that the total package of properties in this round of funding may amount to 22.
Right.
So we're not, I mean, 4 on 1 street is a huge chunk of the properties that are going to be served at all.
Right.
So as a strategy, then, it seems to me that in some respects we're almost spreading ourselves too thin by being in 3 communities and 3 of the most populous.
On the other hand, yeah.
If the strategy is to really go in and just, not write off, but just focus on one single street in each of the 3 communities or something like that.
You're not going to get enough.
You're feeling a little bit small in this universe, aren't we? But at the same time, maybe it is we're having the impact that we want. Is that
right.
Is that the approach?
I agree with you, because in Peekskill, you're not going to find 3 or 4 foreclosures on 1 street in Peekskill. All right, and so again, in that community, finding them in the neighborhoods where we are is perfectly fine. In Yonkers and Mount Vernon, yes, we can find more in specific areas, but we're now competing with private investors that we really weren't expecting. We had said to the banks, we want the worst of the worst. We want those properties that nobody else wants. But now that there's multiple foreclosures next to each other, now the developers want them, because they see the redevelopment potential, not just of one lot, but of 2, 3, and even 4 lots all right next to each other. And
so that's what's in
that changes the strategy for the private investors, yes.
Well, it changes yours, because the private investors will get there first.
No, well, so it depends on the bank.
There first?
It depends on the bank. If we can say within 48 hours to some of the banks, like Chase is probably the best bank to work with. Chase, once they've listed given a property for us and we can get back to them in 48 hours, they pull it off the market. So no private investor can, in fact, give them an offer on that property. So.
And do we have advance notice even over the investors?
Well, Chase wants to make sure that any foreclosed properties, as much as possible, get back into home ownership. So,
right.
because that stabilizes neighborhoods.
Rather than acquiring demolished investors.
Well, if investors get them, you know, then we have to, you know.
The strategy
is to try
against the people who really should have been doing this job in the first place, the investors.
Yes.
And we're elbowing them out. Is that necessarily a proper strategy?
In some communities where, again, you've got multiple foreclosures because just the nature of that street is not is investment and it's not home ownership, you want to turn that street around and have homeowners on that street who are going to take care of their property and are going to have a vested interest in what happens on that street.
So
they're
going to
think twice about
from,
what their tenants yeah. are going
to
be in that
four-family house. So you're
looking
to move from rental to ownership in that situation?
In certain communities, yes. Certain neighborhoods.
Okay, so the investors are likely to be either going to go into it for rental long-term or to flip it.
Correct.
Which isn't necessarily what we're looking to
right.
do either.
Correct.
So it doesn't necessarily be a bad thing that we're elbowing out investors.
Correct.
Okay, because I you know, the investment world is a lot bigger than us.
Mm-hmm.
And if they'll do the right thing, then we ought to get out of their way, it seems to me.
I mean,
but
in
if
essence,
not, then
the only notice we have of what's going to come up with the pipe is the foreclosure filings, okay, the default filings. So that when, because again, we can identify right up front who the bank is. So we're now actually starting to say to Chase specifically, this is a bank, this is a property that we see you've got listed. When it works through your process, can you let us know? So we are, in fact, starting to do that.
Okay, I sort of monopolized. Judy, do you have anything you want to ask?
This is fascinating. Okay. Thank you.
Bernice?
Yeah.
Okay, Pete?
Just clerical. This was very helpful. Do you have the filings by zip, by community as well? Can
yeah.
we get that? The other question, and it's just a nit.
For 2010 or 2009?
Well, both, just to correspond to this.
2009, it's 3,000 listings, so it goes for pages and pages and
well,
pages.
I mean, not the individual ones, but
oh, okay.
the way you have it here, you know, just bottom line by community for judgments. If
oh,
we just
okay.
had another column that said filings,
that's fine.
That would be very helpful. The other question I have, and again, it's a total nit, but I'll ask it anyhow. The numbers don't quite match up. We're talking 704 on this sheet versus 731, 189 versus 195.
And that's because some properties have multiple mortgages on them.
Gotcha.
Okay. In some cases, you've got a home equity and a first prime mortgage. So there are some cases where there's duplicate listings.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Actually, I do have one
Go
question.
Ahead. Go
ahead. Would it make any difference if you looked at Jan through April 2010 versus Jan through April of 2009?
We did actually do that. Deb actually did pull that information for me. We didn't think that it was as representative because it takes about 18 months through the default
okay.
process for it to get to be a foreclosure. So we didn't necessarily see that there was any correlation or
okay.
any advantage to doing that. Plus the laws had changed in late 2008 and there was kind of like a freeze in early 2009.
Yeah.
So again, it wasn't comparable
okay.
in our view of it.
Thank you.
I did have one last question. All right, we've talked about what we're doing. We're talking about how effective it's been. One of the suggestions that's come out of this, Jeffrey said we need more education, we need more outreach. That's one. As a follow-up to that, what else can we be doing? What more can we as a legislature do to assist all of you in this process?
Well, I think one thing that maybe we can do and I know some housing counseling agencies are doing, is just have more face-to-face time with lenders. For example, HDSW did one with Chase 2 Saturdays ago. It was from 9 to 2, and we had over 20 different homeowners come in throughout the area just wanting to meet with Chase, finding out what the modification is and whatnot. I know CHI is working with the rest of the agencies to do that with Bank of America. So if that's something that we can do, I know it's been done before, but maybe something we could do more often, maybe at the county center or whatnot, just bring lenders in. We can coordinate our clients to come and meet with them because it's really a frustrating experience trying to call a bank and trying to talk to somebody who will know all the information, not give you the round around. You know, for us, it's, oh, the authorization, you need to send it again. Oh, we didn't receive this, when in fact, we did follow up and send it because it's a timely issue. I think that's one of the things that maybe we could do.
And if I can just piggyback on that, if there's any way to, if you all have special contacts with, obviously you have it with Chase, but with other major lenders, it seems as though The people that are actually making the decisions, who it would be most effective for the counselors to speak to, are in a secure, like, black box.
Yeah.
And even the counselor hotlines that have been set up, we get somebody who's reading off of a computer, which is notes from the more high-level decision makers. But if there was any way that the lenders could assign negotiators, individuals, to the cases, the way they have it set up, I would say 80% of the time there isn't one person that is responsible for that file. And even if it changes, because there are banks that assign a negotiator and then it changes, but at least you know you have, from our end, a professional to professional that can negotiate a deal. But I don't know if that's possible or that's just their choice to set it up that way. But I think it would be so much more efficient.
Mr. Gowski?
Yes, thank you. On that point, I think it's a fair point. Blanca, we talked about this months ago. It seems to me that, public education, meetings where the homeowners sort of know what's going on, but to your point, you know, we flex our muscles from time to time here, different issues, probably not as often as we should, but it seems to me if we had the list of the top five, the top eight banks or lenders that operate basically here in Westchester.
We have it.
And I've made the suggestion before, I think, but we look at this, we deposit hundreds of millions of dollars to some of these banks. And it seems to me, I don't think there's any laws against, we go out, we look at interest rates, people bid on those. And it seems to me, Mr. Chairman, that we need to bring some of these banks in and just talk turkey to them and say, listen, just what you want, assign, you know, here's what needs to be done. Assign responsible people, have accountability and transparency and responsibility. Whoever, someone's on the case, they're on the case. Not that you have to go back five times. You didn't get this. You go back. It's such a long, frustrating period. Or we can find other banks to do business with. I mean, I don't know if there's anything wrong with doing that.
Dennis, would you, if we hauled in, I mean, we wouldn't subpoena them or anything, but if we were able to get participation with, say, the top five banks around this table and following on Marty's suggestion, sort of jawbone them.
Well,
would that be a feel good for us, or would we actually get something?
Yeah, it would probably be a feel good for you. here's
know which banks they are.
Well, here's the reality. First of all, you know, you have to think about, are they depository banks that you're having trouble with, or are they mortgage servicers that you're having trouble with? In other words, I think the more there's a higher probability that for a bank that has a lot of branches and a lot of customers and, you know, a high profile, that they're going to go above and beyond to try to make sure that they do everything they can within reason to be accessible, to try to solve the problems that can be solved. And then it's the, you know, I'll use Countrywide as an example because they're no longer in existence. But Countrywide was, yeah, they were a bank. They took deposits after a while, but they started out strictly as a mortgage banking company. And their whole focus was on originating and servicing mortgages. And the servicing model is that people pay on time. That's it. So that all the economics of the servicing model are you book the loan, and over the next 30 years, every month the people send in their payment, and you can make money at that. So as soon as you have to assign people to do all this workout stuff, and it throws a wrench into the model. And for those entities that were designed purely as collecting payments and paying the investors, they just don't have the model. So I guess I'll turn it back to these guys. Who would you say, without mentioning any names, is it legitimate banks that have branches on the corners, or is it those entities that are invisible and far away and nobody's ever heard of?
Well, I think the trouble that we're having is when the investor is not willing to do any loss mitigation whatsoever. So the homeowner can either try to sell their house in a traditional way or do a repayment plan, which is usually a very short-term time frame, up to maybe 24 months. So that would mean paying their regular mortgage payment and a portion of whatever they owe. And we're not going to name any names, but I can tell you guys separately. You know, I keep coming against two big investors that are not willing to modify or do a short sale or whatnot. And while the cases that have are impacted by this are very small. You know, it doesn't mean, that's just my agency. I don't know about the others. I'm sure it's the numbers are growing, but that is a problem too. You know, it's not so much, we can deal with the servicer, we can deal with, you know, if they're willing to follow their investor, if they have to follow their investor guidelines, but when you have those two particular investors that are in the area that are not willing to do any loss mitigation, all you can tell the homeowner is like, good luck, try to sell your home traditionally. Right. And how do you, you can't, you know, it breaks your heart.
Basically, we can't force any bank or investor to do a modification. Right. So the only thing that, and I'm sure you guys have tried this, is then you just try to put something creative together and try to do a negotiation.
They won't do it.
But
no,
back to what you were asking, I would say across the board, whether it's servicers or depository lenders, there it seems to be set up that we talk to somebody who's reading notes off of the computer. Mm-hmm. So even if we could get, if you think that there may be an influence or an encouragement for the depository banks, that would really help, you know, because we have a lot of loans.
Yeah, so maybe, Mr. Chairman, maybe make a good point. That's right, these servicers, these investors. But if it's only 30% that are depository banks, that's at least 30% of the problem that not necessarily going to solve it, but maybe have a more sympathetic ear and, you know, hey, let's sit there. We can sit down in private and public and draw a bone and say, hey, what's going on here? And so. I know we have a list of several of the banks, and maybe at some point, just again, the names of some of the banks that, again, if it's only 20 or 30 or 40% of the field, it's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. So, but it's a fair, then you're right.
To this point, to Marty's point, who is it that, who has the decision-making authority, though? I mean, is it the small branch on the corner, or is it the guy down on Wall Street?
Let's take Wachovia Bank. We don't necessarily have to know. We say Wachovia Bank. We have $50 million sitting in your bank, of county funds. We don't care how you can do it out of India or anywhere, but if Blanca Lopez calls, you assign a person to that. It gets done because we'll get feedback from Blanca 3 months later. How did the process go? And did Blanca have to, again, every time she calls, there's someone else on the case, starts all over again. What's the name of that person? What's the address? And it's like starting totally all over again each time, as I understand it.
Yeah, and you're faxing the same information.
We need to, and that how Wachovia does it, you know, we don't care. Just at the end of the day,
except we could be yes to that.
Well, why not? Somebody cares. But let me just give you a specific example. Let's use Chase because I work there. So we ended up acquiring an entity called EMC, or at least the servicing portfolio of EMC. Now, EMC was the conduit that Bear Stearns used to sell these securities. So I don't know how they got originated, probably all through mortgage brokers, some exotic products, some strange stuff. But the EMC stuff was all sold off into securities, CDOs, CMOs, REMICs, whatever you want to call them. So there's all these sort of investors and custodians. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Now, I think our legal counsel, in-house legal counsel, decided that we would make the decisions and let the investors come back to us if they weren't happy, and we'd talk to them later. So we took that position early on. I don't know what others are doing. Then we acquired WaMu. I mean, we didn't acquire WaMu. We acquired pieces of WaMu from the FDIC, which included a huge mortgage servicing portfolio of all kinds of exotic and strange and bizarre things. So, again, we took that same position. WaMu had mostly sold off their paper, you know, the notes, and converted it into securities and sold it off to, not to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, but to, you know, all kinds of. So I think it's those investors. Not, you're going to have to tell me secretly who those two investors are. I'd be interested to find out.
Well, maybe offline.
Mr. Chairman, just a suggestion.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm not altogether sure we want to be in a position of politicizing the investment decisions that the county makes, but I think it's not unreasonable to perhaps consider some offline jawboning here. If we've got some targets here, I mean, this Board of Legislators is not without some clout, and even if it's only perceived, it wouldn't certainly kill
me. Honestly, we place money in 10 or 12 different depositories.
Yeah.
Make it 8. You know, we're not just, you know, we just take you two aren't cooperating, we'll add another couple of million in those other depositories. But if I can, so that's just one area I just wanted to raise that. Another question, as I was leaving, I apologize, but I had to see the chairman. A question that came up with Norma early on, and I don't know if anyone had followed up on this. You said the $7.3 million that we finally got and the purchasing the first home in Peekskill, all that, is, it doesn't seem to be able to talk about more, a very leveraged way of doing it. Does it make more sense to try to find some developers to actually make that, the $179,000, have a developer buy that and get them, wouldn't that leverage, why? Because I said the county, that $7 million is going to go pretty quickly.
But it'll come back.
When we sell that property,
we're going to use it to acquire the property, to rehab it, and to carry it. We're going to get our money back. All of our money. We will lose some on each house. But we have the use of this money until July of 2013.
So the county actually does this as opposed to working with some outside
party?
The government actually makes the purchase.
This is the new neighborhood stabilization program.
Well, we get most of it back so we don't run out. It seems
our original expectation was we would have used a land trust to do this. Let's
talk about it. We can still do that.
Well, now because it's 20 after 9.
It's too much.
Mr. Chair, one final question.
Go ahead.
One final question. Okay, so that answers that. But at the end of the day, we talked about jawboning, getting modifications. Right, that's the goal. But when it's all said and done, I haven't read it recently, but how many of those modifications, in fact, end up failing anyway? I mean, is there a Westchester experience, or if you do the modification, it works?
The national numbers will tell you that...
It doesn't work.
The banks were given a financial incentive to agree to the modifications. Mm-hmm. I think it was $1,500 a month that the homeowner actually paid on time for each of those first 3 months. The banks actually got that incentive. But there was no incentive for the bank to actually agree to that final modification.
Right.
And so that's why... Nationwide, there was 80,000 modifications that weren't being transferred to that final or
right. So that's my question. You go through all this work, we do the jawboning. Yeah. Now what happens? You modify, you change, but do the homeowners at that point, are they able to make a final deal and stay in that, so they default 6 months later anyway?
Go ahead. That's the thing. I mean, some of the homeowners that come, they've been paying their taxes separately. But when you modify, you need to have the PITI together, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. So once you do the modification, and we tell them from the beginning, there could be a risk that once it's modified, and once you have to add your, an escrow, your taxes and insurance, you're going to be paying the same amount, And they'll decide to go with it. Sometimes they get it modified, and then they realize, we can't afford it.
But in theory, aren't they paying taxes and insurance anyway? Or the cash flow is different?
Correct. Or sometimes it's just once you add the taxes and insurance, even if they've had it already from the get-go, it's still
Mr. Chair, that's ultimately, we do all this work, but if at the end of the day, after doing all that,
but at least the homeowner, when they're being counseled, they know that from the start that these are the risks, this is what may happen. And it's not a guaranteed, approval nor a positive outcome. So,
Do some of the people you see coming in fact, 3 years ago when they made this mortgage, in fact, should not have been in the house? I mean, some people were twice, with all these exotic things, were talked into buying, and in fact...
Some of those, though, were folks that were preyed upon. Mm-hmm. So not only should they have not been in the house, the person that convinced them to get in the house should be incarcerated somewhere.
And one other question I hear from some of my constituents, Mr. Chairman, because then people watch the news and say, well, geez, someone came in with all these different deals, no money down and all this kind of stuff.
110%.
So in fact, because you hear these stories, you start feeling terrible, people losing their homes. But some of my constituents say to me, well, it was 100% down, they have really no equity in, they get in there, and so it's terrible they're losing a roof over their head. But in terms of real dollars and investment, what are they really losing? And I don't know what percentage that is, how many that is.
Right, but then you have a flip side where people have put in over $50,000 in their own savings and whatnot.
Absolutely. I'm sure some people are losing real equity. There's no doubt.
Okay. Ms. Dodds gave me a reminder here. I have the report Making Homes Affordable from HUD dated March 4, 2009 here. Are we, the Making Homes Affordable, is that what we're talking about with us when you're saying that the, then what have we got here? What have I got here?
The Making Homes Affordable is the program that the Obama administration put forward that requires or encourages the banks to look at modifications of the mortgages.
Okay.
The Neighborhood Stabilization Program is more what I was focusing. Right. That's after the foreclosure.
But we were just kicking around the question of what turns out to be under this program.
Correct.
And the answer is that there was no incentive on the back end to, in fact, make
the final modification. Right.
Okay. Now, I have one other item here. Members have got a letter here from the letterhead of Walter C. Gabriel that has been sent to Chairman Ryan with regard, and I'm going to ask for a motion on receive and file. We have, in fact, been in communication with Mr. Gabriel. It turns out the property was long since transferred to the City of White Plains, so there's therefore no action by the county. I'm going to ask for a receive and file motion.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Harkham, second by Ms. Myers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. I do apologize for the brevity of this meeting because I know we could go on and on. But I want to thank all of you, particularly Norma and Dennis, for, I don't know, just being forthcoming. Damn it, I hate this. I really do. It's awful. And you guys are really the angels, the better angels of what we're doing here. But and please don't ever stop. But also, please keep us informed. We'll probably have another one of these discussions in 3 or 4 months, maybe the end of the summer, just to see how it's how anything is going. Is there a crisis point where you see, Norma? You said that you thought you were going to see this build and build, but it never did build and build. Is there? Do we really know whether, can you make a guess as to when it's going to start to really spike?
Well, like I said, because of the laws in New York, it's over 400 days from the default to when the actual foreclosure will happen, which leaves a lot of time for the mortgage to get saved or the home to get saved. But realistically, if you look at the peaks of our numbers, it was late last year for the foreclosure, the default filings. So if you translate out to another that out for the 400 and some odd days,
it's about 15 months. So.
Exactly.
Mr. Chairman, one other piece of information, because I mean, you're right. There's differences between the filings and the judgments, and sometimes people either find the money or sometimes it's bankruptcy.
Right.
Like, do we know?
Or short sales, or
do we know? Or short sales. So it's like the end story. If it's 50% bankruptcies, I mean, you have any idea how? Are we driving a lot of people into bankruptcy?
No, there's a very small percentage.
Very small percentage.
Okay. And very small percentage of short sales as well.
It's hard. It's hard to do a short sale or a deed in lieu. It's really hard.
Ms. Dodds.
Would it be useful to have a meeting with some of the bankers?
Well, we discussed that, and I think Dennis was kind of discouraging on the matter, simply because.
Realistic.
Realistic is a better word. Thank you, Ms. Martin. Okay, again, thank you very much. We've got to conclude because we have another committee coming in. I have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Yowski, seconded by Ms. Myers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank
Thanks.
You very much.
Thanks.
He's still
investors.
They're not
the
by far.
That's public knowledge.
It is.